It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest and confidant, Tom Filer, here to give you financial advice for the coming economic times and indeed the ones that we're already in. Tom, welcome back. Okay, so where were we leaving off? We were talking about the interest rates.
Yeah, well, I think we are talking about the dilemma that the Fed has gotten the United States in with regards to its demise, U.S. dollar's demise as the world reserve currency, and then the continued money printing by the Fed is causing an oversupply globally of dollars, and that's causing the dollar to depreciate even further. And so what this, at least in our analysis, indicates is that the Fed is really forced to taper or to not print as much money, to pull back on the quantitative easing. Now, you mentioned the interest rates. We saw that when the Fed considered tapering, we saw interest rates go up dramatically. And they really appreciated at historic levels as far as the appreciation of the interest rates. And that quickly caused a downside to the stock market and a dramatic downside to bonds as well as to other commodities. So that's the dilemma that the United States and the U.S. dollar faces, is the cure to the dollar's decline as the world reserve currency, which is an easing or a tapering of the quantitative easing, may cause U.S. assets, the stock market, bonds, as well as other assets to decline dramatically.
And what are we supposed to do about this, though? There's nothing we can do, is there? Because it's outside of the control of the people. So people basically just got to somehow insulate themselves from it.
Exactly. And, of course, you know, I always look at things from a money manager standpoint. So there are things that can be done in your investment portfolio to protect what may very well be a dramatic decline in the value of the U.S. dollar. In investment portfolio or within an investment strategy, you can use currency ETFs to hedge the value of your dollar. You can use the futures market, and I'm not talking about speculative forex trading, but I'm talking about using hedge strategies to protect the decline of the dollar. You can use that strategy in the futures market. You can also directly buy foreign currencies. So as the U.S. dollar declines, other currencies may benefit to the upside. And you can also use a strategy where you own some assets overseas in other currencies. So those are some of the assets and some of the strategies that can be used to help to hedge what may be a continuing and maybe even an appreciating decline of the U.S. dollar. But, you know, I've got to say that these are strategies that most people aren't used to. It's not been a strategy over many years to have to hedge the value of your dollar asset. So a lot of investors are unfamiliar with how to do that. So investors need to make sure that they consult with professionals before they're making decisions on strategies like this.
Do you think that this lack of securitizing more or less U.S. dollar assets has been a deliberate scheme on behalf of the bankers to get people massively into debt so that they could wind up buying everything out when it collapses for pennies on the dollar?
Well, sure. Yeah, there's been, of course, a tremendous use of the U.S. dollar globally and as a way to try to stimulate the U.S. economy and, to some degree, some areas of the global economy. The powers that be have very much wanted the dollar to be predominant throughout the United States, of course, and throughout the world. And the use of the dollar in a predominant fashion is one way in which the powers that be have been able to enhance their wealth. They'll be the first ones, though, that will be ready to enhance their wealth as the dollar declines, and they've been doing that for years. They've been doing things to protect their assets from the dollar decline, and so this is why everyday Americans need to incorporate these types of strategies into their portfolio.
So is this why, as the vast chunk of the world's wealth essentially got destroyed in the 2008 financial crash, the elite are still the elite because they controlled that crash and hedged all of their bets against it?
Oh, absolutely. That's got to be one of the infuriating aspects to what has happened from 2007 to 2009 and through now. Everyday Americans saw their stock market holdings go down substantially. They saw their real estate holdings go down substantially. Now they've seen from 2011 through now, they've seen their gold and silver holdings go down substantially. There's always somebody on the other side of these trades. It's just somebody's been making money off of these decline or these depreciating assets. So the global banks who are on the verge of bankruptcy, and all the wealth of the powers that be in these global banks, they're doing fine right now. Wall Street is fat with wealth. They've not been hurt at all by the decline in all these assets since 2007. Everyday Americans, on the other hand, are facing the highest unemployment levels and underemployment levels that we've had in decades. And not just Americans, but all over the world. Here in America, we have the most people we've ever had on food stamps and other government support programs. So while everyday Americans and as people all over the world have deeply suffered from the devaluation in wealth since 2007, Wall Street and the global banking system is doing fine.
Now, I heard a recording, I think, of Bill, I'm not sure if it's Bill Mayer or some kind of comedian discovered Stefan Molyneux over the weekend. And there was a point in Stefan's analysis where he talked about how human beings are now farmed, as in we're cattle, we're livestock, essentially, tradable stock. That alive. And he was saying that, oh, everybody knows this, everybody knows that, really criticizing Stefan for saying it when he's trying to clarify, do you understand that this is the way things are right now, that we're livestock? Now, what I found very strange is comedians are supposed to be fairly intelligent, right? They have to be in order to come up with good jokes, right? Yet he believes that everybody knows that they're slaves. I don't think so. I don't think so at all. We've got a grand design here, and the grand design is so intricate that most people, when hearing about it, will dismiss it offhand as being crazy, and will certainly not go into the large quantities of evidence. What do you say, Tom, yourself personally, if you try to explain to somebody that the financial system is controlled by the elite and that you're simply trying to give people tools so that they don't become victims of it, what do you say to somebody who thinks that you're crazy, that to deny what it is that you're saying?
You know, Vince, you mentioned a great, I guess, phenomenon, which is, people, tend to psychologically accept and get used to pain. What happened between 2007 and 2009 when all those assets appreciated for just millions and millions of people all over the world, a lot of people have slowly gotten used to certain things like high unemployment and a very high number of people on food stamps and other government support programs. And yet, if you just take a look at what has happened factually, you see exactly that concept of what you just mentioned there has happened or is happening. So, for example, you know, back in 2008 and 2009, the big mantra was that, you know, we've got to make sure that these big banks, you know, are not too big to fail. And we've got to protect depositors, and we've got to protect investors who have funds in these big banks, protect them from these banks going bankrupt again, or on the edge of going bankrupt. And yet, we see that the great global banks today are bigger than they were back in 2007, 8, and 9. So I think that's one thing people have to understand. And as a matter of fact, they now control more deposits today of people's money than they did back in 2007, 8, and 9. So what we were told was that, you know, we've got to make sure that these banks are not so big that their failing would put everybody's money at risk. And yet the banks have gotten bigger and more people's money are in these banks today. So just the very opposite has happened. What we were told was the objective of a lot of the rules and regulations and laws that have recently been passed.
Now, there's two kinds of people in the world. There's a conspiracy theorist who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain or grow their influence, or a coincidence theorist who thinks that everything happens by sheer coincidence. There's no such thing as backroom deals. There's no such thing as lying. Those people are insane. It's just like I'm not gonna water it down or sugarcoat it. They're insane because all facts point to the direct opposite, right? That's what insanity is. Denial of facts. Isn't that right? So, on that very basis of that definition, our society, almost in its entirety, is completely insane. And somebody was telling me yesterday about the 20% political class, like the 20% of people that are walking the earth today that are intelligent enough to figure out what's going on had they been led down the path to choose. But the problem is they're overridden by a percentage within that is so powerful that it's capable of controlling the 80% of people who cannot think for themselves in order to direct them against their own interests, including the remaining 20% of people who are intelligent enough to work out what's going on. It's a big dilemma. And I said on my Facebook status this morning, Tom, I'm not sure if you follow Facebook, but in order to have a mass awakening, in order to reach critical mass, the masses must be taught how to think critically. What would you say?
I think that's absolutely right. The interesting thing is what's going on out there, how the interests of the wealthy are overriding the interests of the great American public and the public all over the world. It's really all out there in front of us. In other words, people talk about conspiracies but people just have to read the newspaper and kind of, take common sense look at what's going on out there. So for example, people are very aware that when the banks almost defaulted back in 2007 to 2009, the banks, of course, after the wealthy took their profits, the banks were bailed out. And of course, the banks were bailed out, not with real money, because there was no real money to be had, but the banks were bailed out by debt. And so now, we have generations behind us that are paying for the bailout of the banks from 2007 to 2009. Now, if anybody follows the international laws and regulations that have come down since the bailout, they're aware, as I think many of your listeners are, is that the new plan, should there be banks, global banks, the same ones, heading towards defaults, The new plan is for what they're calling a bail-in. And what a bail-in is taking the assets that are in these banks and using them to support the new defaulting global banks, the ones that almost defaulted in 2007, 2009.
Whoa. So they want to steal all remaining wealth that's already in their holdings so that they can just give it to themselves and bail themselves out.
Yeah. In other words, they want to use other people's money. And, of course, that was what the bailout was. The bailout was using other people's money and really debt from generations behind us to bail out their institution. The new plan, because they can't issue more debt, the new plan is to actually take the assets within the banking institutions and to reformat those, to take them away from being just simply deposits and then to securitize these assets to help to financially support the bank. So they're going to take your money, your deposits, they're going to reform them into securities to then support these defaulting banks. And so we just talked about how it's interesting how there are the major global banks actually control more deposits and more wealth than they did back out.
Oh, hold on. That music came in pretty loud there. We'll be right back, folks, after the break.
After they took I from the bottomless pit, my hand was made strong by the end of the Almighty. We've all worked in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? Is all I ever read. Redemption song.
Welcome
Redemption
back.
Song.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show's trying to walk right with the Almighty, you know? If there is such a thing as an almighty entity, I think he probably wants us to fight for ourselves rather than let us be saved. You know what I'm saying? I think it's part of the human condition that there is good within us, and it's constantly battling against the bad within us. And once you've conquered the bad within you, you start to realize there's still a lot of bad out there that must be conquered, I think. Part of those ways of conquering it is removing their tools of conquest, namely financial scumbaggery. And this is why we have the wonderful Tom Filer with us today. Now, we only have two segments left, Tom, and I apologize, but we haven't gone totally deeply into your plans of how to help people financially. So I'm going to be relatively quiet here. I need you to sort of explain in detail your strategies for helping people out of this financial scumbaggery.
I love the way you put that, financial scum, what is it?
Scumbaggery.
There you go, scumbaggery. Well, it just kind of finished off, I think our discussion was that I think you're right. People just need to see and understand what's going on out there. And you can read about it in the newspaper, but you have to have the right context to understand where things are headed. And once you understand that, then you can better understand what's going on and then how and what you need to do to be able to deal with it more effectively. But just to quickly review, we started off with the importance of protecting the value of your currency assets, U.S. dollar possessions and assets, and making sure that your investment strategy has a plan to do that. We also talked about the danger your assets are in the stock and the bond market, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world. And so you've got to make sure that you understand what these stock and bond markets can do to your assets. And you've got to begin to diversify out of these markets and into investments that are more conducive to your interest, your best interest, and the best interest of your family. You've also got to be very cognizant of your money in their banking system and try to figure out and understand where your deposits can be, again, safer for you and more advantageous to your interest. There's actually banks and financial instruments that are available to you that get your money out of their banking system and also get your money out of the derivatives-laden banking system, which continues to put your deposits and your assets at great risk in their institution.
And do you personally offer services to that effect, and where can people go to take advantage of them?
Well, absolutely. We've been working for years with our clients to do this, and it can take some time. It can be a transition to do this, or in some instances, you can move very quickly to do that, but we've been doing this for years. And you can certainly, if you have any questions on how to do that, you can contact my office at the following email, my last name, F-Y-L-E-R, filer at tiac.net, and that's T-I-A-C.net. So again, the email address for any questions or specifically how you might consider doing it with your personal financial circumstances, you can email my office at filer at TIAC.net, T-I-A-C.net. Another priority that people, I think, have to consider with regards to their investments is to protect your gold and silver value. It's heartbreaking to me since 2011 to see the dramatic downside in the value of gold and silver, because we know so many people who have a lot of their assets in gold and silver and who trust gold and silver as a storehouse of value for their assets. For the longest time, and certainly in the DVDs that I've been privileged to do with Chaplain Lindsay Williams, we have for a long time counseled people to invest in gold and to consider gold as a storehouse, as a protective asset for their value of their assets. But we've also counseled people to make sure that you protect and that you hedge your gold and silver values over this time. So it's heartbreaking for us to see people not do that and to have the value, at least in the short term, over the past 2 years, the value of their gold and silver assets go down. We continue to be concerned about the asset value of gold and silver being at risk. And so this is why we would continue to advise and suggest to investors who have gold and silver, particularly those investors who have a large amount of their assets in these precious metals, to make sure that you have a protection strategy and a management strategy for these assets. We believe in the long term these assets will do very well, but in the short term we see no reason why investors need to see the value of their gold and silver go down and plummet to the degree that it has. And we continue to see certain scenarios where gold and silver can lose additional value. That's one thing that we're once again just reiterating is the necessity to protect your gold and silver value. Back in 2012, and I think one of the first DVDs that I did with Chaplain Williams, I mentioned that gold and silver are assets, just like the stock and the bond market. These are markets that the elite can manipulate just like any other asset out there. And we believe our analysis shows us that the elite have manipulated, for various reasons, the value of silver and gold down. And we believe there still is an interest in doing that. So this is why it continues to be important to manage and protect your gold and silver value. We believe you can continue to buy it, but you need to manage and protect it as well. Another
priority, do you feel that people need to have solid gold in their possession, or is paper gold enough?
No, we believe that it's more important to have physical gold and silver ownership.
All right. Sorry, continue. And,
yeah, maybe later in the show we can go into a little more detail about that, but with regard to how it's been, gold and silver has been manipulated. But one of the biggest ways in which gold and silver has been manipulated is actually through the securitized representation of gold and silver through the gold and silver ETF. So that's why it's important to physically own gold and silver. We recommend that the owners of gold and silver, physically gold and silver, have their ownership diversified. You don't want to put all your gold and silver eggs in one basket and physically hold it yourself, because it could be at risk in your physical ownership of it, in your physical possession of it. So we also recommend that you hold some of your gold and silver assets outside of your physical possession of it as well. Another priority we believe that investors need to have, kind of relates to our discussion that we've had thus far today, is we believe that you need to invest in food and natural resource assets. Investing in food and natural resource assets gives an opportunity to get your money out of their system, to get your money out of paper assets and into more tangible resources and tangible assets. The history of owning natural resources is such that natural resources perform very well, even when times are good.
We were talking about paper assets and gold assets, and you told me that 90%+ of paper gold and silver out there doesn't actually have real gold attached to it. It just doesn't exist. They're just selling you paper.
Well, let me just go through the history a little bit of the ETFs. You know, before the ETFs were created, and I guess we're going back to 2001, 2002, prior to the gold ETF, you had to physically buy and hold gold to own it. Well, what happened was, over many, many years, gold had not appreciated that much. Ever since 1973, when the world was taken off the gold standard. And so the powers that be came up with a way in which to dramatically increase the value of gold. And the way they did that was through the creation of these currency, of these gold and silver ETFs. Can you still hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And so what that did, imagine, and just think about this commonsensically, the creation of gold and silver ETFs dramatically created the ability of millions upon millions upon millions of more people to own at least a representation of gold. So that dramatically increased the demand for gold, and so there had to be a dramatic increase in the supply of gold as well. More demand necessitated, of course, more product or more supply. But of course, the problem is that you just can't simply, start mining a dramatically greater supply of gold. You just can't automatically simply do that. So when you created a dramatic increase in the demand for gold, there wasn't the ability to increase the dramatic supply of gold except by leveraging and borrowing off of gold. In other words, creating a debt in gold. So what the powers that be did was create these ETFs, and in creating these ETFs, they had to dramatically leverage or borrow off of gold to create a greater supply of gold. So they really created a leverage as a supply, a greater supply in gold. Well, a greater leverage, you can only go so far in creating through debt a greater supply of something. And that applies to gold and it applies to currency. You're going to come to a point where you can't continue to leverage or create a paper supply of any asset. And so the ability to positively create supply through debt or leverage in gold, kind of reached its height in 2011 when gold popped. And so once that happened, once gold popped and they had reached the limits of their ability to profitably leverage gold, then they had to dramatically bring down the price. And so that's what happened to gold, is that basically if people understand the concept of real estate, houses being leveraged to the extent that the value of houses went underwater. In other words, the debt for the housing stock became greater than the value of the housing stock, and thus people understand that the value of their houses became underwater. In other words, the debt on their house is greater than the value. Well, that is what has happened with gold, is the leverage or the debt or the debt value of gold became greater than the supply. And so this is why we've had to deleverage the value of gold, and this is why the powers that be had to bring down and are continuing to bring down the price of gold.
Now, also, people don't realize is that the value of gold is often representative of the value of the currency that you're purchasing the gold in. If your currency ain't worth much, then the gold's going to cost you more. But what's happening now is that both the currency and the gold are being manipulated so that you ain't got nothing at all. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Every day, yeah, yeah. Ooh, baby, I love your way. Every day. Shadows grow so long before my eyes, and they're moving across the face.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Tom Filer is my guest. Tom, we only have about 12 minutes to wrap all this up. It's insufficient time. I apologize for that, but we're going to have to do our best.
Well, I appreciate any of the time that I'm able to spend with you and just your audience. I always appreciate the opportunity. Why don't we kind of end up on that fifth priority, to invest in food and natural resource assets or commodities. I was recently listening to Jim Rogers, who a lot of people know as a very wealthy investor. He's done very well over many years, especially investing in commodities. And, of course, he says the best investment is agriculture. Many, many times in discussions with Captain Lindsay Williams, he relates to me how people ask him, what do the elite invest in? And while we know the elite invest in the stock market, they own and they run the stock market to their benefit, and they have a lot of wealth tied up there. And they invest in gold and silver, and they benefit from that as well, and they move these markets up and down, you know, to their benefit. But what Chaplain Williams always says to me is the response that he gets from his elite friends and his elite contacts is that, and this makes sense. People just need to use their common sense. They own real assets. They own tangible assets. In other words, they own the assets that everybody needs in life, human beings need in life to subsist. So, you know, they own grain, agriculture, and they own food assets that we need to be able to live and survive each and every day. They own timber, of which you need to build almost everything in life. They own copper, again, something that you need to be able to construct you know, things within life. And so that's what they own. You know, that's what their real economy is. And so while they make it very easy for us, and they kind of herd the rest of us into their stock market, that's what most people do. Most people know for all their lives that they invest in the stock market. They contribute money to a 401k and it goes into their stock market. And yet, you know, people aren't used to, or they don't know the opportunities that there are to invest in tangible resources and assets. And that this is something that myself and my associates have been doing for years, is helping people to get their money out of their system into tangible assets and natural resource assets. Recently, we put together a natural resources fund, which helps people to do that. By investing the natural resources fund, they can invest in diversified assets in natural resources, but also the natural resources fund hedges and protects all these assets as well. So it protects and hedges these natural resources assets, and it also protects and hedges the currency that are used in which to invest in these natural resource assets. We, after many years, put together this natural resources fund to make these types of strategies available to more people. So you don't need millions of dollars to be able to invest in natural resources assets, but you can invest in a diversified fund of these assets with lesser money so that more people are able to invest in these types of assets. We also would encourage people to look at businesses to invest in. The wealthiest people in the world are wealthy because they own or they have interests in businesses, which invest in not only natural resource assets, but which invest in the very things that are necessary for people to be able to exist and to live in the world that we live in today. And so investing in businesses that provide the very means to our existence and survival are also things that people need to take a look at to invest in.
And if there is do you have a website for that agriculture investment fund?
We don't. Anybody who wants information on that can email me again to filer@tiac.net. Right now, we're just putting the fund together, and they're in assets that you know we have operated for years. There'll be a the fund will be investing in gold and silver, and we'll be hedging and protecting those assets. We already have businesses which invest in, for example, organic produce, also businesses that invest in cattle and other livestock. And we feed these livestock organic grass-fed feed, so they're very healthy food for people to eat. So these are businesses that we've run for years, and we're going to be including them in these natural resources, in this natural resources fund.
Do you think that the organic food is one of the best investment opportunities? Because I've been looking around at what industrial agriculture is doing, and I see that the soil is becoming a lot less healthy. The food has almost no nutritional value left anymore. There isn't that being free of pesticides and herbicides advantage to it. Not to mention a lot of our food supply is currently controlled by the major elite agribusiness. And in my opinion, it's pretty much they're just launching soft kill weapons, you know, using the food as the delivery system. That's my opinion anyway. And I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Well, you know, you're in my opinion, you're right on. and you really bring up the crux of really the survival of our freedom. And if I could get into just a quick discussion of that, you know, once our ability to grow our own food in the manner in which we want to grow it, and that to have our own food accessible to us, if that ever gets taken away from us, then the elite will have, and the powers that be will have total control over us. So absolutely, you know, we need to continue what I call a revolution in, you know, the everyday people of the world being able to grow and to harvest and to have businesses, their own food production businesses all over the world. You know, here in America, we have food co-ops. Well, you know what food co-ops are? They are people wanting to know how their food is grown and the type of way the food is grown, and to be able to have the opportunity to buy food, which is organic, you know, which isn't based on pesticides and chemicals. And so, you know, we need to continue to develop our businesses in food production. And boy, we've got to make sure that our right and our freedom to do this is never taken away from us, because once that's taken away from us, we've got total control against us.
Yeah. It kind of doesn't matter what you want. I want to resist you. You're a bad guy. Okay. How long are you going to be resisting me without food or water?
Exactly. A
couple of days? Tops?
Exactly. And, yeah. And again, this goes back to, this is what the powers that be understand. And that's why they own tangible assets and they own agricultural and food and commodity assets. We need to continue to this revolution in wanting to grow our own food. We need to continue that revolution. We need to build upon it. So instead of us taking our money and investing in their system, we need to take our money and we need to invest in our own economy. And that economy has to include our investing in food production businesses.
Well, from the ground up, I mean, because I think that's the problem with the world today, is that we do have a resource-based economy. The problem is the elite control and own the resources. I say if all remaining money in the world for the good, decent people that have money that are left, and I think they're growing and shrinking, shrinking by the day, rather, need to think of this in terms of survival of the human race. Let me strike that, survival of the free human race, because there's not a whole lot of point in surviving if you're not free, you know? And we've really got to think about this. The business system doesn't run for the benefit of people anymore. It is run by the benefit of a few scumbags. So if we want to turn that around, we've got to start at every single point where they've got us corrupted, which is more or less every single commodity, isn't it? Especially those, as you've rightly pointed out, are indeed essential for continued survival. So, Tom, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. Do you have any other websites or things you'd wish to plug? We've got less than a minute left.
Well, one website that kind of explains, I think, some of the things that we've been talking about here is www.wallstreettosmallstreet.com. That's Wall Street to Keo, smallstreet.com. So a lot of the information that we've kind of discussed here is maybe explained in greater detail there. But again, I would just encourage anybody who has any questions about our discussion and maybe wants to learn a little bit more about maybe how to accomplish some of these things, how to get your assets more in your control as opposed in the control of the powers that be, just email my firm at filer@tiac.net.
All right, Tom Filer, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for appearing on the show at such a short notice and giving out some of this really healthy financial advice and strategy that those of you out there that are listening to this broadcast that still have something to invest left that the elite haven't stolen off you already can indeed use those resources to help the world head towards a better future rather than just giving it to the elite stock market. So, Tom, thank you. And also, ladies and gentlemen, I want to reiterate that this is a 100% listener-supported broadcast. I need you to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There is a bank account there and a PayPal, two different PayPal buttons optional. You can either make a donation or set up an automatic payment for a regular contribution. Thank you very much. We'll see you again.